So this is Chernobyl number 3, a regular QRR at 220, 230, 240, back down to 230, 220. Ready. Although the resurgence of wildlife in the zone is widely acknowledged, it is still little understood. Professors Wood and Beresford are leading separate works units within a project called Transfer, Exposure and Effects, an effort jointly funded by the Natural Environment Research Council, NERC, the Environment Agency, Radioactive Waste Management Limited and Science and Technology Facilities Council, STFC, aimed at filling in some of those gaps. By setting up camera traps in three areas roughly reflecting high, medium and low contamination and cross-checking captured images with other indicators of ecosystem health like animal droppings and soil samples, they hope to form a picture of population densities that will tell us how, if at all, the Chernobyl ecosystems differ from others. Much of the work involves trudging through radioactive woodlands, kneeling in radioactive dirt and collecting potentially radioactive dung. While Professor Beresford believes the group's research will demonstrate a strong resurgence in animal populations over the past 30 years, some scientists still rigorously argue the opposite, that the mammal population has fallen, not grown, indicating that radiation has indeed had a catastrophic impact. The only creature the Telegraph encountered on a recent trip to the area was a freshwater pond turtle. We saw signs of much more, including the tracks and droppings of wolves, elk, red deer and wild boar. The research does not focus on individual animals, largely because of the logistical challenges of capturing and monitoring wild individuals. That means there is still virtually zero data on the prevalence of cancers, birth defects, genetic mutations or other known impacts of radiation, all well studied in humans, in Chernobyl's wildlife population. The health of the wolves, horses and bison caught in the camera traps remains a mystery, though there is little doubt that they do suffer in some way. We're not saying that radiation is not as dangerous as we thought. Rather, it is possible that in the absence of humans, the stress of radioactive contamination is a manageable one for wildlife populations, said Professor Wood. It is not just animals who have returned to Chernobyl. As radiation levels fall with the natural decay of radionuclides, 30 years marks the half-life of cesium-137, one of the major pollutants from the accident. Humans, too, have returned. The historic town of Chernobyl itself, roughly 10 miles south of the power station, is now a dormitory campus housing some 3,000 workers, scientists and policemen who guard, monitor and maintain the area. Working on strict rotations to keep their exposure to radiation low, they form a predominantly male community for whom high background radiation is simply part of the job. For a handful, the zone is neither a workplace nor a laboratory, but home. Leonid Rindyuk, 87, and his wife, Ekaterina, 89, who worked for decades on the floating cranes unloading river barges before the accident, were evacuated from Chernobyl the day after the accident in 1986. Like other evacuees, they were eventually given a flat in Kyiv and paid modest state benefits. But they never took to city life, and in 1993 they returned to the century-old wooden house built by Mr. Rindyuk's grandfather on the banks of the Pripyat River. "I didn't like Kyiv. You have to look every which way before you cross the road, and I'm of such an age. Here I'm happy," said Mr. Rindyuk. There are currently 187 such returnees, mostly in their 80s and 90s, scattered around the zone. They largely rely on subsistence farming, foraging, and not exactly legal fishing, and have an occasionally strained relationship with the zone's authorities, who call them settlers and enforce strict rules to prevent any of their locally harvested food leaving the zone. "I ask you one thing, don't call us settlers. We're local residents. This is our home," said Leonid Struck, a neighbour of the Rindyuks, and at 57, one of the younger residents. "As for radiation, look, all those lions, Lyonas and Ekaterina's age who moved away have died, and all those who came back are still alive," said Mr. Struck, who works in the zone transporting radioactive material to storage. "The authorities test our produce for radiation every autumn. They never find anything." Although increasingly frail, Leonid and Ekaterina have both exceeded Ukrainian life expectancy, currently 63 for men and 76 for women. The authorities who run the zone long since ceased arguing the point. While police make sure that no food leaves the zone, no attempt is made to evict the returnees, and several locals and officials admit that poaching from the rivers and forests by locals is generally tolerated. We give them recommendations, but we have no legal power whatsoever to tell anyone what to do, said Leonid Bogdan, the head of the European Union equipped laboratory that monitors contamination across the zone, including annual surveys of the so-called settlers. Locally raised food. We know they generally ignore us. A couple of dried freshwater bream caught by settlers in the Pripyat River, about 10 kilometres downstream from the power station, came up perfectly clean in radiological terms when the Telegraph had them tested. That's not necessarily surprising, said Mr. Bogdan, but it doesn't mean that the river or anything else is safe. The truth, he said, is that you can't talk about blanket contamination in a wide area. Maps show contamination varying widely across the zone, depending on where the cesium, plutonium and other particles from the explosion came to Earth. I can tell you how radioactive about 3 square metres of land are, but anything larger than that and you're going to see variations within it.